Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
So I got to pick the movie this time.
We gotta do the intro.
Okay, cool. I mean, sure, intro the show.
Intro the show. There's a turn the podcast. It's like, yeah, we're mid to Scott. That would be like, that's some Andy, not fucking, what's his name? Andy Kaufman. If Andy Kaufman had a podcast, it would 100% just be like, you come in, it's midway through the recording. You have no idea what's going on. He releases each episode in like a new podcast, but they're all consecutive. It's a running plot.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week two men review a movie that one of us can't believe the other hasn't seen. I'm Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my wonderful, wonderful friend, husband, and like metaphorical lover, Harrison Poole.
Hey, buddy, how we doing?
We had to do an early recording, so I'm hanging in there.
Okay.
Early, of course, for anyone who's not aware, being 11 a.m.
You even pushed it back to like 11:45. Yeah, so.
God, it's so fucking early.
It's after the movie, it's 2.
Jesus Christ. People aren't even at work yet. This is miserable.
Alright, so do you wanna introduce the movie?
No, it's your movie. I mean you gave me a list and I chose one. But this was the movie that you brought. You gave me the list. It is of your choice.
Yeah, I picked 2016 Swiss Army Man.
A good year.
Right? Dude.
Nothing bad happened there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's Swiss Army Man. I always want to say Swiss Army Knife Man.
Yeah, Swiss Army Man.
I always want to say Swiss Army Knife Man. It's been on my list probably since it came out. I'm just really bad about seeing movies, which is great for this podcast.
Absolutely. I'm truly shocked you've not seen this movie, considering how much you talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. And even that, one of my favorite movies, I was like dragged. I wasn't dragged to, but I only went and saw it because someone's like, you want to go see this movie? I said, yeah, okay. Like, I deeply love cinema as an art form. I just never seek it out. Like, I'm trying to get through, like, a show right now because my friends want to talk about it. And it's a struggle. A struggle much like our good friend Paul goes through in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Dano. Hank. That's his character's name. Hank Thompson. Yeah.
A boring-ass name.
I think that is kind of the point.
Give him like a good like Polish name. You never see any people with Polish names in movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Name one. Can't.
No. You're can't. Correct. I can't.
Fucking waspy ass Hank fucking Thompson.
So this movie, I want to start it off by saying I fucking love this movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It's yeah. It was. It's definitely the precursor of something great, like much better to come. I think my favorite thing. Have you seen any of the Daniels short films?
No.
All right. I think my favorite thing, my favorite consistent through line among their work is its incredibly stupid ideas taken so incredibly seriously.
Yeah, like there's. It is just like it's shot like with such importance,
yeah,
which it deserves, but like every shot like feels like it belongs in like a Schindler's List kind of movie, like a big movie that like this Oscar buzz about. It shot like some big, I don't want to say the word important because I think this is an important movie, but like a big like quote-unquote important movie. Yeah.
Like capital I important.
Yeah, I was going to name some movies there, but then I was like, I don't want to slander these movies because I'm sure they're good.
Also, the fact that this movie did not get Oscar buzz, I get it. I truly get it. It's a crime.
What else was out that year for Oscar nomination?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember.
Like, what won Best Picture?
Let me look it up. Was that the first Black Panther year?
Was it?
Here, let me look up 2016 Oscars.
Fucking 8 years ago now. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right? Oh, this was the Moonlight La La Land year.
I was going to say Moonlight. See, I was going to be like, it's all, you know, they favor other movies like Moonlight. I didn't want to slander Moonlight. I'm slandering Moonlight now, La La Land.
Why? What? Moonlight rules.
It rules, yeah, but like it's... Because I like it. I like movies like this. But the Academy and the industry place more importance in some movies than others. And like Moonlight and like La La Land are those movies compared to like a movie about Daniel Radcliffe having a boner and farting a bunch.
Sure, I guess. I don't know. I like both those movies. They're fine. I'll be honest, I like Swiss Army Man a lot more. Moonlight rules, though.
Swiss Army Man. I almost said Swiss Knife. So, fuck. What a name.
Multi-purpose tool guy.
Multi-purpose tool guy, which would also been a great name. That's probably the name of the, like, when he was writing it. Like, that's the name of the final draft file was, like, multi-purpose tool guy. He's like, I gotta think of a better name for this.
So Swiss Army Man is made by two men named Daniel, who go by Daniels. This was their debut feature. They did a bunch of shorts beforehand, though they also rip. This was part of the Sundance workshop, I think. And then once that was over, someone, I assume Sundance, gave them $3 million to make this movie, and they made a fucking masterpiece.
They did. They really... And they got, like, a lot of talent in it. Like, the three people I'm going to call, like, the headliners.
Yeah.
Even though, like, Poole Mary doesn't get her name on the front of the DVD cover. She's one of the headliners. Like, incredible actors. Like, this is your first feature-length film. That's crazy.
Dude. I love so much that Daniel Radcliffe, and Robert Pattinson did this too, but Daniel Radcliffe, they made their franchise money, and it's just like, fuck it, I'm set for life, let me do whatever I want from
whatever.
Now on.
Whatever, like, it's... Robert Pattinson, I feel like he's just trying to make people forget Twilight by doing the craziest fucking movies he can.
Maybe. That might be part of it, genuinely. I don't know.
Daniel Radcliffe, I just think, just likes acting.
I think they both do. I don't.
Yeah, but I think like his primary motivation, he just like showed up. Like, I feel like if he could live without even being paid for it, he'd do it. It's just something he finds fun.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
And that's why he shows up in all these strange fucking movies constantly.
I mean, true. If I'm not going to pretend to know how much he's worth, but if I was worth that much,
a lot.
But okay, so
Harry fucking Potter, man, he's worth his weight in gold.
I'll get to it later. I mentioned it during the movie. The cameraman is Andy Hall of Manchester Orchestra, and that rules.
That's like wild to me.
That's true.
Has he done other movies?
I could not tell you.
Did he just show up for this one? He's like, oh yeah, I want to do this gun.
Maybe he's friends with the people. Maybe he like read the script.
Yeah, I have tons of friends, right, who I would not let run a camera for me. Like, just because you're how is he?
The news cameraman, yeah.
Oh.
The actor who plays the news cameraman is Andy Hall from...
Did
you think the cinematographer?
At a certain point, I think I just kind of assumed you meant the cinematographer. Was him,
no,
and that's
guy.
Where my confusion was from. Okay, as an actor, 100%, I can see that. I thought he was like double rolling it. I think it melded together that he's doing both at a certain point, which wouldn't make sense because he's running the camera when he's on camera. We're gonna move past this. It starts on an island.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I thought more of the movie would be on this island.
Sure, that's fair. I'll be honest, me too. I thought the entire movie was going to take, basically the entire movie.
Yeah, like that's how it's
kind of
like pitched, is it's like an island adventure.
Yeah, it's way more of a wilderness movie. So it starts on an island. We don't know how long Hank has been there. I'm going to guess by beard length and how long his hair was, like 3 months, give or take. I don't know. That's about how long my beard will get
after three months. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's been that long.
Right.
Like, a lot longer than you want to be stuck on an island. But he wasn't like Tom Hanks yet.
Right. Long enough to be suicidal, not long enough to,
Well, that could be... That doesn't have to be long at all, really.
I get it. So Paul, Hank is such a boring name. I know that's the point. Paul Dano, Hank, they're just going to be used interchangeably. Paul Dano's about to hang himself.
Yeah.
He's standing on a cooler with the thinnest goddamn piece
of rope. But the cleanest. It's like the thinnest and cleanest rope you've ever seen. It's like, I get he's on a shitty fucking island and he's like the trash king of building things with trash. But which I don't think gets explored enough in this movie, where that skill came from. But he's like doing the most ineffectual suicide I've ever seen.
The thinnest goddamn piece of rope you ever did see. He's standing on a cooler. He's about to say goodbye to the world. He's singing what will be the motif of the movie to himself when he sees a body. A wash ashore.
It's him. It's Harry Potter.
Yeah, it is.
Which, Harry Potter doesn't exist in this universe, I suppose. You ever think about that?
I mean, sure.
See a movie where it's like, that's Harrison Ford, so Star Wars doesn't exist?
I mean, sure. I think, truly, I've given that zero thought. I'm on board. No, I like this theory.
Yeah, it's so... you gotta think about, especially with the fucking, Marvel movies, where, they're constantly referencing pop culture, but everyone from pop culture is in these movies.
Sure.
Are they like, hey, that guy looks a lot like the guy that was in Hotel Rwanda, but that's just my friend War Machine.
Oh, what was the fucking RDJ movie that he made with Zach Galifianakis right after Hangover Kid? Due Date.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking.
Does Due Date exist?
Right. Or, yeah. Does Iron Man exist in the Due Date universe?
That's, what I'm so confused about. I guess we have Interview with the Vampire, because it's Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise who have yet to make their appearance. That's all we have, really. Maybe they only have, Tom Cruise movies, which would be nuts.
So what you're saying is every movie should be this is the end, where all of the actors exist in the real world.
Yeah, I want to see them double. I want to see Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark see Robert Downey Jr. as Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. See, okay, my thought process was that... Robert Downey Jr., let's pretend Doolittle.
Yeah.
I've never seen Doolittle. No one did. Okay. But his Doolittle moves into the neighborhood, and then an actor goes by. Has anyone ever told you you look like Iron Man?
Yeah, it should be brought up a bunch. I know that's crazy, but the other alternative is we're living in a world where half of Hollywood doesn't exist. Peter Parker's never seen Scott Pilgrim.
True, I guess. Yeah,
you can see Scott Pilgrim.
That's fair. Holy shit.
See, Star Wars don't have this problem. Any sci-fi doesn't have this problem, really. Because you can be like, oh, you look like that guy 100 years ago, Chris Pine. That's not crazy. But I don't know. It's something that distracts me from every movie I've ever seen. If it's set during contemporary times, it's a very deep personal issue I have, but I'm working through it.
Okay, I'm happy for you. So a body washes ashore.
Harry Potter.
Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Manny, short for humanity.
And is that what it's short for?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know if that's actually true,
Is that the metaphor?
The metaphor is that it's Hank holding on to his letting go and holding on to his humanity through suicidal ideation.
Huh.
We'll get to it later. I've always taken it as a trans allegory, but it's way more upfront as a metaphor for depression.
Yeah, I want to talk about this trans allegory you got cooking. I didn't pick that up at all.
Okay, cool. So
no, that's gonna be fun. But yeah, he washes up, and to prove that the rope is there's so shitty, he goes, oh hey, a body, and he tries to get down, and starts dying on the noose, but it just fucking breaks because it was a terrible noose. It was never gonna work.
So now, genuinely, okay, I don't want this in the movie, but maybe it's not in the bonus features I've seen it, but I want to see a bonus feature where it's an alternate short where the rope just breaks, but Manny isn't there. Like, he goes to kill himself.
And it just doesn't work. Like, yeah, it's just, I don't know, jump in the ocean. You're right next to an ocean. Just walk into it.
Or, oh my God, what's that fucking, I don't remember the short story name, but the Twilight Zone episode based on the short story where the prisoner's about to be hanged, and then in the short story, the rope breaks and he goes on this whole fucking adventure. And then at the end of the episode, you find out that the rope didn't break. Like, what if that was this movie?
Oh, like, it's all in his head.
Yeah. Like, I would hate that ending, but, like, what if that was this movie?
I'd be very upset with it. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
This movie's, a lot of wacky things happen in this movie that we're supposed to accept as, perhaps the lack of Harry Potter in this universe gave it a bit more magic.
You know what? I'm willing.
That's my work.
I'm willing to concede that.
I'm going to be talking about this the entire podcast.
Of course.
Every time I see Daniel Radcliffe, I'm just like, this is a world where Harry Potter does not exist.
I'm sure he's very thankful that he was able to, like, touch children's lives and, like, make a living for a decade. But I'm sure it gets very, 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 very old.
Yeah, 100%.
The fact that those movies have been finished almost as long as they were running, or like basically,
yeah, they like
life.
Crossed mediums. I think I saw Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone when I was like in elementary school, and we were still like using VHSs, and like they ended on like Blu-ray, which is insane when you think about it. Hunger Games also wouldn't exist in this universe, would it? Because like Hunger Games, I'm gonna argue, comes directly from the kind of boom of young adult fiction that Harry Potter created. There's a lot of stuff. Like, is Jennifer Lawrence a star in this movie? Like, does she exist as a movie star without Hunger Games, without Harry Potter? It's an entirely different universe we're living in.
She's not in this movie, so I can't tell you.
But in the world she is, right? But without Harry Potter, would we have Katniss?
So the rope breaks. And he wanders over to this body who knows is dead, but may not be dead, but knows is dead. Like,
I think he thinks it might be alive.
Yeah.
Until he gets to it. We definitely know he's dead because we haven't been trapped on an island for 3 months and we're seeing things clearly, and that is clearly a corpse.
So he goes over to this body. He starts talking to the body, starts like trying to press the body into life.
CPR.
No. He just presses the body into life. You know,
this wasn't an auto medium, so you could see the original motion Harrison made for CPR, which is like playing the bongos.
So he starts like trying to revive the body. Doesn't work. It's clearly dead. It's still a human, so he is clearly dead. The body farts, and Paul Dano gives up hope, and so he takes Daniel Radcliffe's belt, rips it off his body, and then ties it to the string to hang himself.
Which doesn't fix the issue. Like, that, it's just going to break further up. Like, you're just extending the point of pressure. It's like with telephone poles. It's got to be one continuous material. Like, he's not, it's just gonna break at the holding point now. That's where the point of stress is. I'm sorry, just like, he's so crafty throughout this entire fucking movie. He does like absolutely batshit, like MacGyver shit. He builds sets better than sets I've been on by supposedly professional film students making professional movies. And it's astounding that the one thing in which he fails is building a noose.
Right, so he's about to hang himself with the belt and the rope now.
Yeah.
And then the waves come and they start swooping up Daniel Radcliffe. And Daniel Radcliffe starts farting like a mad machine. And it starts like moving around a little bit like a jet ski. Like slow at
There's
first.
A lot of things I want to see behind the scenes how they made it happened. This 100%. Is one of them. I want to see what they were doing to make him move like that. Or the dummy. I know there was one dummy for some scenes.
Sure.
Because he brought it on a talk show. But, like, I want to know what they were doing to Because he moves so unnaturally in this movie as a moving corpse would. Spoilers. but like, is it wires?
Could not tell you. My guess is...
Does he just do that? Is that just what Daniel Radcliffe can do?
My guess is... I truly would love to see behind the scenes. My guess is it's like shot at a weird frame rate. And then they like put it
into... Yeah, later on it's definitely a frame rate.
Yeah.
It's when he's like... He spins around on the ground.
That I can't tell you. I don't know. I would love to see it.
So Italian man blow him, tossing him like a pizza?
Yeah. So he starts like going around like a little pontoon boat. Hank has an idea, and so he doesn't hang himself for a second time, and he walks over with the piece of rope that broke and straps onto Manny and rides him like a jet ski to safety.
And that's when their title comes in, and I was like, oh, this is a different movie. That, because like, I thought I understood this movie. I thought, you know, I was a bit wiser than the actual consumer. When they're like, oh, what's this movie about? Oh, it's about a corpse that farts. What the fuck? No, I understood that pretty well. But then it's like, oh, it's not on an island. Like, we're just going full-fisted into this, like, right from the start. Which I appreciate. I feel like the movie would have suffered if they, like, kind of spent too much time before all the crazy corpse shit happens.
Right.
Like, they also don't spend much time on it in the beginning. They just kind of get right into the flow of it, which I think was really necessary because it is such an absurd concept.
Oh, yeah. With, that like, if you juice box and stuff?
That if you linger on the fact that this corpse is doing these things for any period of time, if you put any questioning into it, it falls apart. I forgot about the fucking juice boxes. Yeah, the first fucking scene is a juice box that floats by and says, help me. And it's like, what the fuck's that going to do? And like, later on, we see other things that actually have, like, more description, like maybe where he set off from. And like, yeah, someone could find that and that could lead to it. But just, if I just found a juice box that says, help me, on the beach, I wouldn't think, it's a man's trapped on an island and he sent us out. I think it just trashed. Someone wrote help me on for some fucking reason. Now the milk jug that says, I'm trapped on an island. I'm like, there's a clue to the puzzle of this trash and you go with it.
I don't want to die alone.
Yeah, like then he just write things on there so I just don't think it's a piece of trash that says help me. I write help me and things all the time before I throw them away.
That's sad. My boat crashed. Yeah, that kind of thing.
That's how I get my Starbucks order. They're like, what's the name? I'm like, help me!
So, rides him like a jet ski. It's the title sequence. Greatest title.
Great music. Great close-ups. He's having the time of his life riding this dead guy.
And then they hit a bad wave. They both sink a little bit, and they wash ashore. And then Paul Dano discovers Miracle Cheese Puffs.
Miracle Cheese Puffs, and that he's back near land. Which, like, I'm gonna be vague so we don't spoil it so early on. But, like, that island's not that far away from where he was before he was not on the island. He's, like, really close to, like, the circle of it. What happened? I know they want, like, it's not important to the movie, but they just, like, take a little, like, sailboat out and crash on an island. Like, he was so close.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe he rode as a jet ski for, like, hours, but, like, we only got to see a few seconds of it. I don't know, dude. You're not supposed to think about that. So he finds these Miracle Chiefs puffs, and that concludes the first 10 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, like, the movie's hour and a half, about.
Yes.
Doesn't really feel like that. Goes by pretty quick.
Yeah.
But we spent almost no time in setup whatsoever.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Also, in my notes, I wrote certain time markers, because every 10 to 15 minutes... either Manny gets a crazy power or like a huge, weird, monumental plot thing happens. This movie flies by, but also is like so methodically structured, which for what is colloquially known as the farting corpse movie, you would not think that they put that much thought
into it. It's really well made, and it has to be. Like, if you're first... big movie that you're doing your feature-length movie is about a farting corpse, you need to have spent months making sure it works plot-wise. You cannot have a single flaw in this fucking movie.
Also, I don't remember where I heard this. I don't know if I made this up. I think it was on Mark Maron's podcast the reason this movie is the way it is for a bunch of stuff in this movie is that the Daniels hate body humor, hate a cappella scores, and hate like Man Trapped on Island or Man Trapped in Woods movies. And so they had to they challenged themselves to like make a script and make a movie that had all of those elements that they hate so much. But they had to make it brilliant. Yeah. Because they had to like it.
No, like, because there is, yeah, like, we've heard it at this point, but there is, like, this a cappella track that plays in the background. And, like, it was the tune he was humming at the beginning, which I imagine took a lot of time to get right. Like, the composer spent a lot of time trying to figure out this tune, writing it out, trying different drafts. He recorded every single song we hear in this movie in the afternoon, I'm convinced. Because then he just puts lyrics, like, over it relating to what's happening in the scene where he'll be like, oh, montage, and like I'm trusting that he's good enough a musician that is all an afternoon's work. There's no way he did like several takes of that.
Do we want to get in? Okay, are we gonna get into the score? Or
the score is a very important part of the movie.
The score fucking rules.
It's one of the, like, it's narratable. It's a narrative structure almost, because again, he is just kind of telling you what's happening, singing over an a cappella track.
Yes, they do the John Carpenter thing where it's like two or three main musical cues that they use over and over and over and over to different effect. It rules. There's like four melodies. I think there's like two or three original melodies, and then Got an Eye Joe for some reason.
This movie's wild, guys. There's like big names in this fucking movie, like established names. And then you just like look at the premise, and it's shot so beautifully. And then you like look at the premise. It's incredible.
Genuinely, it didn't this time because I've seen it like seven times, but the first couple times that the Cotton Eye Joe acapella came on.
Yeah, like Cotton Eye Joe is a...
Yeah.
Cotton Eye Joe is an important part of this movie.
Oh yeah, welled a little bit. There's still not this last time or the time before for this podcast, again, because I think I'm just like emotionally numb to it at this point.
Yeah.
But there's a couple times where they have the like ba 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 like that, where especially at the very end, we're like, I'm not sobbing, nor am I really even crying, but there's welling. There's it gets me.
Even I, the man who never cries, wells occasionally in a movie. Movies or anything on movie. No, like it's such like I want to get it out now so we just don't. I just keep going back to it. It is such a well-crafted movie.
Dude.
Like, visually, like, I'm talking, like, in the technical aspect. Also, in every other aspect. But technically, it is a beautiful movie. It is, the sound's wonderful. The lighting's wonderful. The camera's wonderful. Like, the love I'm not a big, like, love story in movies guy.
Sure.
I'm not really, like, a big romance movie guy. Which is weird, considering how I am. But, like, okay. It moves me.
Yeah. Also, yeah, I know they literally asked the question in the score. They're falling in love,
right? Falling in love.
Okay. But also, I forget where I
Like, as a love story, it's right up there with the 50 Shades trilogy, which I hardly recommend to everyone. Hold off, though, because we will be watching them.
I have not seen any of them. Are we gonna get Jenna on and fucking?
I would love to. They're so good. Like, the first one's What Do You Expect? The other two, I think, are. I'm not saying they're great cinema. I enjoyed the last two. The first one's What Do You Expect? The other two are like good.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll talk to Jenna and see if she wants to come on. Again, I don't remember where I heard this, but this movie, I believe, was pitched to the Sundance Workshop with the sentence, the first fart makes you laugh, and the last fart makes you cry.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It's a the farts vary, and they're a very emotional part of it. Farting is a big thing about being honest with your friends, is what we learned in this movie.
It's like true emotional honesty. So he's on a shore. For a second, we think it's just another island or the same island. We later find out it's not. It's just away from civilization. But he's washed ashore and he finds these magical Chiefs puffs. And then he turns on his phone to reveal his lock screen is Mary Elizabeth Winstead on a bus. And his phone battery is at 10% and he has no signal.
No signal.
So we are meant to believe it is, or it's trying to show us that, like, he's trying to get back to her, that, like, he's in love, that they're a couple and he's trying to get back to his love. I understand. We are correct. I clocked it right away.
I think it's clocked right away. It's the way he looks at it.
I agree with you. I have a couple friends who were tricked by it.
Because, like, it's like clearly, if you're going to have a picture of your significant other as your lock screen, like 9 times out of 10, it's going to be like you and them.
Mine?
Yeah, like if I saw that picture, I'm like, that's clearly, you know, it's a picture that looks like it was taken in with their consent or in an environment with their consent.
Yeah.
You are sharing. He clearly has like a stalker phone, which is ballsy. Like, make that your like home screen. Make your lock screen anything else.
Hell yeah.
But like, make your lock screen like, I don't know, a fun landscape. And then when you get past your passcode, that's when you have your creepy stalker photo.
Also, I just showed Matthew my lock and home screen, which are my partner with our cat. And then my partner with our dog.
Yeah, like that. I look at that and I go, okay, that's clearly your partner.
Yeah, both were snaps taken by her and sent to me with her consent.
And so, I'm like, this is a stalk. It's clearly, I don't understand how everyone did not immediately clock
Dude,
that.
Either, yeah.
That's why I thought you were supposed to. I thought that's the tension of the thing.
I agree with you. I am on your side. I clocked it right away. I have friends who were like, oh, he's trying to get back to his loved one.
Disown them.
They're allowed to misread something. They read it how it was intended to be read in the beginning, and then the reveal that he's a stalker comes later, and like, well, yeah, I mean, he's a stalker, it's the explanation is that she was happy and he wasn't, but
I'm gonna speak out. I'm gonna bravely speak out in defense of Hank Thompson.
Please go for it.
It's stalkerish behavior. I would not. It's weird behavior. A concept in this movie they bring up is being weird a lot. It is weird, creepy behavior. I do not think he was stalking this woman.
Sure. I would probably agree. I believe, based on what the movie has shown, the worst it got was that he would be on the bus when she was on the bus.
Yeah.
And possibly occasionally he would be on the bus when he didn't need to be on the bus because she was going to be on the bus.
Yeah, but he didn't, like, follow her around.
Until the end when he's in her backyard.
Yeah, but you don't think he knew that.
Well, okay. Now we're getting to the big question. Is Manny a metaphor? No, I know, like, Manny in the movie is a corpse.
Yeah.
But are the powers, quote-unquote, real? Or...
Folks, we have no idea what this movie's fucking about. Is it about suicide, holding on to hope? Is it a trans metaphor? Is it a metaphor for stalking? It can't be all of these. These are radically different interpretations of this movie.
I truly think their intention was that it was a metaphor for depression and suicidal ideation and holding on to humanity. So, Manny being dead is, like, the weird part of Hank that Hank wants to kill.
But it's all happened. It's all real because the corpse once we're out of like that universe, it farts off into the ocean.
Or is that just what happens in his head? And what actually happened was like him farting was real, but then it's just him letting his weird side be alive. Like it's him choosing life.
No, it's the father's reaction that I think.
I
everyone else reacts to it as though it's a crazy fucking thing to be happening.
I agree with
you. If everyone had been like, "Hey, it was all real," sure, but like only Paul and his father do that. Everyone else is like, "What the actual fuck is happening right now?" Which is how you would react if it were really happening.
I agree with you. I want to believe that everything in this movie is real. Like, that obviously Manny is a metaphor, storytelling-wise, but in the universe of the movie, I want to believe that Manny is real.
Yeah, I think he's one of God's best angels. I think he was sent.
So, okay. Cool.
Not like an actual angel, but I think...
No, I know what you mean.
He's a device of fate.
Yes, okay. I follow that.
You know, he comes in when you're about to kill yourself and you're stuck in an island, and then he gets you off an island and puts you into a very awkward, bad situation for you, then farts off into the ocean.
So we're like 12 minutes into this movie.
Like, he could have just left. He could have, like, spoilers, he could have just, like, taken him to a road, left him there, and it would have been fine. Fair. But he just kind of take him to the worst possible outcome for all this.
That's fair. I don't, yeah. So the...
I don't think this movie has a happy ending.
I don't know.
So it's, I don't think it's a happy ending.
I don't think... Okay. I forget which screenwriter talks about this idea, but the idea of the movie after the movie...
Yeah.
Like, the 10 minutes of movie after the movie, I don't think that's happy.
Yeah, that's what I'm... Like, I'm fine with an unhappy ending, but, like, there's an uplifting moment, and then the movie after the movie isn't happy. Like, I don't know, maybe we can, like, cut this and put this at the end so it sounds like I'm talking about it when we're, like, there plot-wise. But, like...
No, this is staying right here. I think
it's not great for him. I think he'll be... eventually they'll figure out he was trapped on an island and just went fucking crazy. I think he'd get away with most of this on... being fucking insane and trapped in an island and stumbling through the wilderness.
See, that's the thing. Is Hank crazy from the island? Or is Manny real? Is the central question of this
movie. I think
Manny
is real, and Hank is also going insane in a separate, different fashion. Separate.
I want to agree with you, and so I will. So...
Because he does. Because... Again, we're just jumping all over the place. Because Manny talks to the girl, and the girl repeats what Manny said to her mother.
Yes, or is it a Tyler Durden situation?
I don't think it's a Tyler Durden situation.
Okay. Okay, cool.
I truly...
Also, not to spoil a fucking, at this point, almost 30-year-old book and movie, but...
Because none of... We'd have to be so deep in a strange fucking metaphor... Because he uses Hank to do so much that other characters see happen. And so much of it is done through Hank's magical corpse powers.
Manny,
yeah. So much of the things that, like, other characters after, like, other characters come into Hank's world, they see things he built using the powers of Manny.
Okay. Fair. Okay.
I like a metaphorical movie. I don't like when they're like, oh, can't have a little... Can't have magic happen. It has to be a metaphor for something. No, I think it's both. I think it's a metaphor, but there's also very real necromancy, I'm going to call it, happening.
So the phone's at 10%.
The phone's at 10%. And we see his creepy stalker photo.
Yes. And then Hank puts Manny on his back, like a dead boy backpack, and starts carrying him around to a cave. Yeah. That's what happens. That's what I wrote in my notes. They find an abandoned camp. There's more walking. And then he starts singing Cotton Eye Joe for the first time.
For the first time.
Yeah, and isn't it annoying when something gets stuck in your head?
He's also, like, I understand. Because, yeah, so he's in this cave, and there's, like, a lot of trash, and he's, like, fiddling with the trash. Like, I understand that it's a hard journey to get out of where he's at. I think they're in, like, California.
Sure.
Because, like, we see an Instagram and it mentions California. I think it's, like, Northern California they're in.
Okay.
It's kind of the same environment.
Sure.
So it's dangerous. Just head east. I was thinking of the entire movie. Just walk east.
But his compass points.
Yeah, don't follow that. I didn't come to a great conclusion. You're like, where do I go? Where do I go? You're in California.
We'll get to that later.
You're on the coast. The coast is west. Walk east. You'll find someone. And that's what he does. They just kind of walk eastern in the eastern direction, and they find civilization.
You know what? You're probably right. So they set up camp for the night. Hank is trying to collect rainwater.
Which he does masterfully.
Yeah.
Like he said, like that's how you build a water trap for wilderness survival situations with the tarp that collects it and drains yeah. down. He builds it like, I used to teach kids how to do this. See, I would have passed that child. That's a great water trap. Walk east!
He starts talking to the corpse.
I'm sympathetic towards Hank, but I was very frustrated by his geographic prowess.
Sure. At this point, the corpse is still a corpse.
Yeah.
He's a magic corpse, but he has not talked yet.
Yeah, he's still a, spoilers, he'll be quite chatty. But, like, he's merely an ordinary, run-of-the-mill magic corpse.
Right. So he sets up camp. He's trying to collect rainwater. I know he sings it in the beginning when he's trying to hang himself, but it's the first time there's like the I'm fucking crazy.
Yeah.
The like that motif returns again. I thought I was rescued, like that kind of thing. It's the first time that cue happens again, which again will happen so many times.
Yeah, like constantly throughout this movie.
But overnight, the rain water is just dripping into Manny, into his mouth. And then they wake up the next day. And
well, there's also the first hint there that he's magical. Yeah. He closes his eyes, but then he opens them again.
Well, there's that. But I think the first hint was that he was a fucking jet ski.
I'm not a mortuary assistant. I don't know how corpses work. Seem normal to me.
Okay. Okay.
I've only ever been to one funeral. I don't know how it works.
You've only this is an off mic conversation. You've only ever been to one funeral, anyway. So I'm
yeah,
so
my
sorry.
Family's.
I'm sorry.
I have like five people. My family, they just don't die. So
okay, so they wake up the next morning, and he fails to catch the raccoon, and then he discovers Manny's magic power that he's a water fountain.
Yeah, like a water pump, I'd say.
Oh yeah. He drinks from the solo cup, and then Manny starts talking, and we've officially reached 20 minutes into this movie.
Yeah, like he starts talking like kind of bad, like when he pushes on him he talks
like rigor mortis, like the yeah. His, you know, like his muscles have sealed essentially,
but then like he starts to actually talk, and Paul freaks out. Hank freaks out too. I think Paul probably thought that was actually a corpse, but freaks out and runs off, and he comes back and the corpse is talking. You said that he accepts it a bit too early. I feel like I would have the same reaction. If there's a corpse near me and it starts talking, I would scream, run off, come back, the corpse is still talking, and just kind of assume that's what's happening now.
So, okay. So would you think that you were crazy, or would you think the corpse was actually talking?
I don't think it would matter to me. I think I'd question it for a bit and just decide, well, this is the reality I'm living in. Like, either it's really happening or I think it's really happening. They're effectively the same thing in this moment.
Okay. Sure. Sure, I guess. What's next? Oh, the magazine. Where Hank stares at the Sports Illustrated magazine.
Yeah, the swimsuit edition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they start talking about human bodies. And then we find out that Hank's boner is a compass. Yeah. That's what happens.
Not Hank's boner.
Oh, fucking Manny's boner. God damn it. Okay. From now on, I'm not calling them by their characters. They are going to be called by their actors. I'm so sorry.
See you, Manny. I'm just going to follow my own fucking cock for the rest of this movie.
Daniel Radcliffe's Manny's boner is a magic compass.
Now, that's a bit later that they discover that, right? Because they have the whole montage where he learns He teaches him about the world outside.
You're so fucking
and
right.
And after that montage, they're talking about like women, and he
oh
like,
yeah, and then he falls, eats the berries the and vomits, and yeah, it's the next time he's staring at the magazine.
Yeah, he learns that his writhing cock is a beacon towards civilization. This is the one thing that I'm like, he's accepting things too big. Like, he just kind of assumes that this dick is pointing him towards home.
I mean at this point, if you've accepted that it's a talking corpse that's a jet ski and a water fountain,
that's more believable to me, because it's all insular to the body. I can more easily believe that the body's able to be a jet ski and the body's able to talk than his like cock is a compass to the concept of home. It's not like a, like if it pointed north, yeah, sure, I'd accept that pretty easily. But it's like the fucking compass from like Pirates of the Caribbean, where it points towards what your heart desires most.
Sure. He talks about physical intimacy and love stories, and his dick is a compass.
And then his cock points towards the metaphorical concept of one's love.
We've officially reached the 30-minute point of this movie. Oh my god. So much. So much. I'm not even going to say and so little. Just so much is packed into this movie.
Yeah, a lot is constantly happening, and we never linger on any of it.
It's told so fluidly that it doesn't feel jarring.
Honestly, the cock love compass is probably why this movie wasn't nominated for an Oscar. I'm gonna be real with you.
See, okay, that honestly, I get that.
it does lead to my favorite line in the movie, because this is big fucking erection. Writhing's the word. It's like not in a natural way. It's like spitting and shit. And Paul Dano reacts as one would expect if you just looked over and, like, even just your normal alive friend had a huge fucking boner going on. He's like, oh, God. But it leads to Daniel Radcliffe saying the line, oh, God, I'm disgusting, which is also, like, what I say. I feel like that's a very common reaction to the realization of one's own lust is, oh, God, I'm disgusting. Post-nut clarity. But as Manny's a wise character, he has that clarity before the nut. Doesn't nut in this movie. Never gets to. It's kind
of
sad.
Speaking of, the literal next scene is them discussing masturbation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we find out that Hank's mom is dead.
Yeah.
And he doesn't masturbate because he thinks of his mom.
Yeah. We could go into more info in that. You know where I'm gonna leave that for you to figure out. Watch the movie and you can understand why he thinks about his mom when he masturbates. I don't want to touch why he does it. I wanted to leave a little mystery for you.
Okay.
I'll say she's dead.
Oh yeah. And
she died when he was young.
Yeah.
And he connects that with masturbation. And in the same info dump, we learned that his dad, while he loves him, is kind of an asshole.
Yes. And now when Manny masturbates, which doesn't happen,
which never happens. Manny, let the poor corpse nut.
He will think of Hank's mom.
Yeah.
And that offends Hank. That's the second time Manny offends Hank.
Yeah, he offends him. He doesn't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He offends him when he discovers he starts. It's like the first thing. The first thing Hank does when he starts really talking.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I'd be upset if like.
If a corpse called you unlovable.
If you thought about my mom while you jacked off or something, that's okay for you to do. I'm letting you know.
I'm not gonna.
I take it as a compliment. I came out of that.
Okay. So Hank gets offended, Manny dies again, and then I wrote in the margins, there is an hour left of this movie.
Yeah, like...
So much happens so quickly. Hank steps and falls and shit, he accidentally falls and the phone turns on. Manny's back because Hank is afraid and he needs Manny, and it's a fucking bear.
It's a fucking bear.
Oh, yeah.
And also, this is where Manny starts to fall in love with the phone woman.
Yeah. Very, very soon. Yes. Yeah. He like sees her, is like, oh shit, that's a beautiful lady, but then doesn't like delve into it. They fall down the cliff and they escape the bear for the first time.
Yeah. the bear's the reoccurring antagonist of this movie, along with Manny's inability to say the appropriate thing in a situation, and Hank's inability to have critical thinking about his lock screen.
Yes. But the very next,
like the
scene...
the movie after this movie would be so fine. It would be perfectly fine if he just chose a spoilers. If he just chose a different lock screen. That's why you don't do that.
I agree with you.
He calls the corpse weird, and here you make that your home screen. Also, block your phone. Cops just get right in there.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have a lock on their phone?
This was 2016.
In 2016, I had an iPhone where I had to type a code to get into it.
I didn't.
What?
Nah, I was a good old boy who didn't hide shit. I still don't hide shit. But
it's not hiding shit. It's just privacy.
No, I acknowledge that now. I mean, you have my phone code. Like, I will give it. I mean, not to you, random listener, but like, I will give you my phone code. I have nothing to hide. But no, I understand it now. At the time, I didn't. Like, no, it made perfect sense. He didn't have a code.
A coat's just like wearing clothes. just it preserves your modesty.
So they fall down the cliff. Manny gets hard to marry Elizabeth Winstead.
Who can blame the guy? We all saw Scott Pilgrim and ruined a generation of film people.
She's an excellent actress and a very beautiful woman. That is, yeah.
And it breaks my heart that everyone's like, the Scott Pilgrim girl. I'm like, she's in Death Proof.
She rips in Death Proof.
Yeah, she's in Death Proof. She's in fucking Cloverfield. Dude. She's in like a lot of shit.
Daniel Radcliffe, Manny the Corpse, has convinced himself that he is married, dating, somehow...
Or supposed to fall in love.
Is somehow in love or connected to Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Who does she have a name?
Sarah.
Well, no, the fictional lady is Sarah, but, like, is Mary Elizabeth Winstead...
No, it's Sarah, too, because we see her Instagram and it says Sarah on it.
Okay. Oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's actually...
Okay, cool. Must have missed that detail.
How
I'm
do
so
you
sorry.
Find her fucking Instagram?
What do you mean?
He's a stranger on the bus.
I don't... He's... That's probably the most stalkerish is.
It is. It's pretty stalkerish. It's...
Maybe they had a conversation overheard...
I have trouble finding people I know on Instagram sometimes. Like, people I'm friends with. I'm just not very good at it. I've been told by the youth to stop calls. It's follow me on Instagram, not add me on Instagram. And now, like, the Facebook has, like, a new search thing that's, like, AI. And it's just messing me up. I don't know. Oh, technology is so hard.
Right. Anyway. So he's convinced that he's in love with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. He convinces Hank to dress up as her. I believe this is the scene where I'm convinced that at least partially it's a trans metaphor. Because he doesn't want to do it at first because he thinks it's weird and society is rejecting him. And then Manny, the weird version of him, is what convinces him to dress up and calls him beautiful. And if you see his face, that is the face of pure joy.
I think that's more just a commentary that men in our society are lonely and they never get compliments. He's just happy because he views himself as an unlovable person, that just to be called beautiful by anyone would be a thing.
See,
I think it's too short. Like, it doesn't carry over into the ending of it, I think. And cross-dressing doesn't necessarily imply trans, is it?
No, I agree with you. There's just...
Drag queens exist.
Sure. There's the way he reacts honored. And I understand maybe it's like he just got a compliment and he's happy he got a compliment. That is a very specific compliment to be honored about. And when he does dress up as the woman and becomes Sarah, he officially he uses Manny to shave. He like shaves and fully becomes the character in a way that doesn't feel drag performative. It feels like this is how he is, at least between between the two of them living.
I think it's more stalkerish behavior than it is that of a trans person.
Okay, so like a Norman Batesy,
a Norman Batesy thing.
That makes total sense. Yeah. I viewed it as like
how I would describe this character pretty well, was an innocent Norman Bates. Because like there's a lot of like weird stalkerish behavior he engages in.
Sure.
But like he seems aware that it's bad.
Okay.
And he tries to like...
He's self-aware.
He's self-aware and isolating.
Yes. Okay. See, okay, I view...
It's very much like, because it's a whole, like, ties into the whole suicidal themes.
Yes, yes, yes.
I think it's very much it's very much about, like, loneliness in society and how we feel lonely. And I'm going to get my little soapbox here. Bop, bop, bop. I'm on top of it now. I think that, like, a lot of the radicalization, this is going on a wild turn, a lot of the radicalization we see in the men in America, especially like towards the right, is because we don't have an adequate network to support people.
That's just a fact.
Yeah, that's a fact. Like when I was at Kent State, and you were at Kent State at this time too, there's a lot of like far right movements on campus. And one of them,
like, drawing the swastikas on the stone, and
a turning point was in like swastika, but they were like kind of far right.
They were just starting.
And there was a protest where they all like dressed up as like the Rugrats and sat at playpen because that's what safe spaces look like. And one of them wore a diaper, and no one was happy with that on either side. But like, I actually like talked to this guy because my friend had a political radio show, and we managed to get him as a guest. He was just kind of like a lonely guy who wanted friends, and it just found like, I'm not saying, I don't want to come out, I don't want people to be like, oh, Matt's supporting the stalker's behavior of Hank Thompson, but like, I think the movie plays you too. It's not, when we're saying stalker, we're not putting a negative, like a negative. It's unacceptable behavior, but it's of a, he's a very broken man, and I think they needed that behavior in there, that kind of like sad, weird, not allowed behavior to kind of tie into just like how close this man was to suicide.
Yes. I can say personal experience. I never fell down the alt-right pipeline. I was at the very, very, very tip where like I was seeing the things in the algorithm. I never like delved into them, but I did notice that, or like post, like in hindsight, the moments where I was at my most suicidal in college and when the algorithm started recommending that those things to me were when I was at my most isolated.
And I think it also definitely, I don't think this, a lot of the behavior we see in the movie happened before. I think being trapped in the island kind of made everything worse.
See, okay. Isolation as a metaphor, like as a metaphor for depression, works. I viewed it as a metaphor for depression, but also as a metaphor, like through a lens of trans. Like, but now that you've just mentioned that it could be just innocent Norman Bates, which is a truly like a great theory. Like, I love that.
I think
theory.
It ties into his madness.
Yeah.
Also, I like how like when you're at your peak, you're getting the algorithm. At my peak, I'm getting like on watch lists because like my extremist turn is like posting about how like the IRA did no wrong.
Sure.
Like, it's like, you know what, Zodiac, not the Zodiac, I always go Zodiac, the Unabomber was correct. Ted Kaczynski was an American hero.
Okay, now I gotta move on. where the fuck were, oh, they're on the bus, they're doing the meet cute.
I hate that you called it a meet cute.
I wrote in my, I said build bus for meet cute.
I hate that.
It's
just meeting someone. Why do you call it meet cute? That's how, oh, we had a meet cute. Yeah, that's how every relationship starts. It's just meeting somebody. You're just meeting somebody.
I agree. No, in real life, I agree with you. In movies, in media, I call it a meet cute because that's the term that is used.
I hate it.
I don't agree. However, I like it. It's cute. But
like, that started us on the road to fucking like soft launching relationships, which is something the youth do.
Yeah,
you know about this?
Yes, I know. It's fucking weird. Just fucking be with them or don't be with them.
Social media ruined a generation.
Please keep listening to our podcast.
I'm pushing
guys.
It towards, we're going to get exclusively older millennial and boomer audience. Stop using TikTok.
So on the bus, he explains what love story is. Is the first moment where you think he's about to fall in love with this corpse. And then you find out that Manny has flint and steel fingers.
Can you hear me chewing?
Yes. Yes. You're fine. I'm recording this on two channels, so I may cut at certain points. He has flint and steel fingers. 50 minutes into this movie, we have just crossed the halfway point. and then it's the montage with Uproarious Rock a cappella where they talk about having a montage. It's pop popcorn, pop popcorn.
Well, I think
are we falling in love? True friendship?
Because later on he talks about how I'm going to be jumping all over this place. I only have notes. later on, he talked about how he wanted to give Manny the things he couldn't have. I think that's part of why he dresses up as her, because it is a way to give Manny what he didn't have, and that's a way for him to like validate. He's experiencing that secondhand.
Okay, that's fair.
I think throughout the movie, there's not really a part in this movie where he doesn't value Manny. Like, I get to the part where he actually values, like, he gets upset with him at times, but he does value him.
Yeah.
But like, he is using his abilities, but like, it's a mutual thing. He's like, we're going to get you there and stuff. I'm glad they didn't do a plot thing where he's like, well, now I'm going to leave you behind. Like, no. Through the whole thing is pretty consistent.
Except for Manny,
like,
just keeps dying.
Yeah, Manny just keeps dying. But, there goes my train of thought.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that wasn't you. I felt that slide out of my fucking brain. My God. But he's also using him as a way to live the life he wants to live.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Which, again, worked into my trans metaphor, but
I'm not sure it does.
I disagree. So they have a movie date. We find out Manny, they're choking on popcorn. He's like, fucking cannon.
And he's like a gun.
He's a fucking machine gun grappling hook. He kills a raccoon.
Yeah, they blow a raccoon's brain off.
They dinner date and dance. He's a fucking spring-loaded karate chop.
he is karate chop arm action.
They take a water fountain shower. They find vodka and throw a big party. Very tipsy. Manny talks to Sarah. He talks to Sarah about how Hank won't masturbate because it makes him think of his mom. Sarah is Hank.
and he's like, maybe he should allow himself to be loved.
He won't do something that makes him happy because it makes him think of his dead mom, which makes him sad.
I think his mom would want him to be happy.
His mom would want him to be happy. So what he's doing is actively holding himself back because he's sad. Truly, it's a beautiful metaphor, and
it
I
is.
Fucking hate that it's masturbation.
Now, remember, if you ever... if you're feeling down, your mom probably wants you to masturbate.
So he's fallen in love. They lean in for a kiss, and then they fall over drunk. They go to bed, and they wake up the next day, and it's real awkward. They start traveling.
Been there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Why are you sorry? I just, I'm a flirty drunk. It's not like a bad situation. It's awkward.
I am the best drunk. However,
I like existing as a person in society. No. As an experience for a sober person. Yeah, like it was just it, like because you know a lot of drunks can mean whatever, but no, you just be sitting in class, say having a good. Having a boring time, you're trying to fall asleep, you don't give a shit about sound, and then like
I like sound.
Boom boom, in comes Harrison drunk out of his mind, gives you all hugs, tries to talk to the professor, leaves.
I just wanted to state it, I graduated with a 3.9 GPA.
It's incredible. It really is a testament to his abilities as a film person that he because if you looked at him...
I worked for ESPN.
If you just saw this happen, like if you were just visiting Kent State and you saw this man walking around Franklin Hall, you'd be like, that guy does not go here.
Anyway, so it's an awkward next morning and he starts walking across the pipe and Manny starts pointing... Daniel Radcliffe, Manny the Corpse, starts pointing out that he feels emotional distance, but he says it in the bluntest, most like specific and abstract way possible. I don't know how he can do both. Those are two conflicting words. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He says it in his typical dead child court, almost childlike in how he talks.
Yes. And he's like, I feel like even though I'm physically touching you, there's some kind of social distance between us
that we will never cross.
And then the pipe breaks. They start, they fall into the water and start drowning. And that's when the kiss officially, Paul Dano uses Daniel Radcliffe as like a scuba oxygen tank.
Yeah.
And then
they uncork him.
I forgot.
Yeah. He's been corked
because he's a farting jet ski. Daniel Radcliffe has been had to cork up his ass for a good chunk of this
for,
movie.
Like
this
since
point.
Like. 20 minutes in. That's true.
And then they uncork him and he fucking jet skis them up to safety. And we just get a shot of Daniel Radcliffe's bare, hairy ass. Paul Dano uses Daniel Radcliffe as a grappling hook, which fucking rules.
It's nuts. Can build a grapple, can't hang himself. Like, he built a grapple hook that could withstand the weight of two people.
It's at this point they start getting emotionally close again. He starts talking about how he and his dad aren't close, but he sends a birthday email every year. And how his dad loves him, but, like, can't show it. It's a metaphor for masculinity. And I don't even think it's a metaphor. I think it's a straight up fucking statement.
It's kind of touching.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I never talked to my dad, and
but yeah,
he doesn't love me. I don't know my dad. There's a lot of dads in these movies. I don't understand what's happening. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm like, what's going on? The idea of having, like, a paternal figure. This is a weird, like, therapy rant. The idea of having a paternal figure falls so flat to me. Like, it's just something I struggle to understand in most situations, and like there's a lot of movies I just mostly don't connect to because of it.
Okay.
I was playing Fallout 3 recently, and like I managed to connect to that, which astounded me. The idea that I could be like, oh, spoiler for a 20-year-old video game, however fucking old it is. Your dad dies. I'm like, oh, that's sad. But just like,
Were you angry at the bear in this movie because your dad was killed by a bear?
I was. I did understand the sheer terror of the bear attack. That was actually, I mean, you're aware. I was like pissing myself and shaking. That's a deep primal fear I remember from being a small little boy as my father was mauled by three bears up in the Appalachians to defend both me and my mother from their vicious attack.
I'm sorry to bring it up.
It's okay. I think it should be brought up more. We need awareness on bears. If you see a bear, fucking shoot it. Kill bears. They ate my dad.
We talked about it a little bit during the movie. I thought that it was a safe space to mention it here. I apologize.
No, it is a safe space. I'm getting emotional, but that's important.
No, I understand.
Much like how someone in a meeting about like drug abuse would get emotional about the things they've done. This is a trauma that's part of me. And I think that we as a society need to address this trauma exists in many people whose fathers were eaten by three bears in the Appalachians. And as a society, we should make a move to just fucking start killing bears. Just go to the Appalachians. Just fucking like, there used to be like a big squirrel hunt in America.
Yeah.
I think it was squirrels or groundhogs. There's just too many of them. And they just fucking mow them down. They pay children to kill them. I think we should just all as a society, we're very fractured right now.
Just
pick up arms. And I want to see them extinct. Mountains.
Yeah, okay.
I want to see no bears in America.
I do think that we should probably do a little more research on what it would do to the ecosystem, generally. But I do believe that there that
more fathers.
What?
More fathers.
That's fair. You know, yeah. Yeah, but yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know where to go from here because I understand that this is like a really...
It's a tough situation.
I'm sorry. Hank and his dad are emotionally love each other, but can't like connect. And it has led
how men are. Like this movie really resonated with me in two ways, fathers aside, which is, glad I didn't kill myself when I was five.
Yeah.
That was the first time I had a knife wrestle out of my hands.
Sure.
Exciting times. And that I was raised by a single mother. I just, this movie teaches me anything, masculinity in your upbringing just sucks. Like, so much of this movie is just like, I'm a man who doesn't know how to talk about their emotions.
So, this is okay. I'm going to very briefly ask this question, yeah. And then we can move on. Do you believe that had your father not been mauled and he had been alive,
I would be a worse person.
You would be a worse person. I'd be a worse. You believe that?
Yeah. My only saving grace as a straight man is that I was raised by a single mother.
Okay.
I think if you, this is my hot take for the day. If you're a straight man who was who had a father in your life, it's probably very hard to deal with you emotionally.
I don't know.
And it's not like anyone's fault. It's just society.
I understand.
It's the concept of it. And it, obviously there's exceptions. I'm not going to say this.
No,
everything.
I got you.
But like there's the Paul Dano Thompson's. Whole issue in life is that he is clinging to a very traditional American masculine narrative.
Sure.
Which I think is, it also you see starts to get better when he moves away and starts kissing a male corpse.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, generally society frowns on two men showing platonic affection for each other.
Yes.
Despite like other countries doing it all the time.
Yeah.
And generally society frowns upon interacting with corpses. So in two ways, he breaks his taboo and begins his journey towards a peace of mind.
Now, do you think it is that society, I mean, yes, society doesn't, in American society, especially American masculine society, generally doesn't reward men showing platonic affection to each other. I love you very much.
I love you too.
Do you think that, I mean, it is that, but do you also think that American society in general doesn't view mouth kissing as platonic? Because that is an inherently romantic thing also.
Yeah, we view any kind of kissing. We don't view any kissing as platonic, I'd argue, except between like a parent and their child.
Sure. And even then, there are people who are weird.
But like generally, like now, any mouth stuff, the wonderful album by Neil Seagara, is viewed as romantic in nature. And I think a lot of this is kind of him. He's never felt loved because he's been obsessing over finding the one woman who'll be his wife. But once he allows himself to experience true, deep platonic love from just anyone, in this case, a dead corpse man, that's when he starts to truly love himself.
And this movie is colloquially known as the farting corpse movie. It's so beautiful.
It is.
And
it is
deep.
I think every man should love this movie, then find their own Hank or Manny.
Yes, 100%. And yeah, in fact, well, they contemplate like living in the woods forever, which not to go. I mean, I will get off my trans metaphor also, but I think also because Hank could only live as Sarah in the woods, that him wanting to stay in the woods was him like wanting to live this like isolation life where he could be himself, both with Manny, but also as Sarah, which was my read on the situation. So the bear's back.
Yeah, the bear returns, much to my own terror.
Do we miss anything in the meantime? I mean, he checks email. He got his card from his dad. He got the emotional whatever.
Yeah, we see Sarah's Instagram and that she's with another man.
Yeah. Her boyfriend, husband.
Probably husband.
Probably. This is where it's officially revealed that Sarah was a stranger the whole time.
Someone's surprise.
Yeah, I didn't get it either, but like, yeah. No, I agree with you. So the bear's back.
The bear's back. This is the big climactic battle.
Yes, and earlier, yes, it was revealed that Sarah was fake. I mean, she's real, but like, she wasn't Manny's lady wife, and
she's no one. None of the main characters are married to this individual.
Correct. And how it was Paul Dano's phone the entire time. And essentially he's been lying to Manny forever to try and get him to use his magic powers. And because of that, Manny feels crushed and he can't use his canon magic powers. And the bear gets him. But they hide up in a tree at first.
Yeah.
And then Manny gets racing thoughts, which starts Hank to like spiral down the tree, which is a truly beautiful visualization of what like a legit thought spiral is.
Yeah.
Like how thoughts just connect to different thoughts, but they go by so fast you can't hold on to them and you physically feel like your fault. Like there are a couple movies that do this too, but there are like, that is at least the emotional honesty of visually what it feels like. Yeah, no,
it was so well shown. As someone who really doesn't have that experience in their own life, because clinically, I was born stupid. No, it is a really good, it's a very good expression of just kind of the spiral of obsession.
Yes.
Because, like, not only can you, like, even if you view it as perhaps Danny is keeping track of the thoughts, it's the overwhelmingness of a fleeting ethereal nature of obsession.
Yes.
That's the most pretentious thing I've said all day.
I mean, truly today, probably.
The fleeting ethereal nature of obsession is shown through the flashing images of the dead corpse.
And as someone who has been put in a psychiatric hospital twice, I get that feeling wholly. That, like, you can't grab onto anything. And, like, he literally can't grab onto the branches. And Manny can't grab onto his thoughts. And how the thoughts become less and less... they start off as like things that happened and then they turn into like
imagination.
Yeah, Manny fading into the blackness. And like I know what I'm trying to say. I hope it's coming across.
I think it is.
It feels like you're going crazy. And I love that. And a lot of movies try to visualize what it feels like to go crazy. This movie gets it. And this, and like Perks of Being a Wallflower does it differently, but Perks of Being a Wallflower also understands like what it feels like to be in that spiral and how to visually show that. Or at least it knows how to show the emotional honesty, even if that's not like literally what I'm thinking, it is what I'm feeling.
Yeah. I think the only other way that people have shown that successfully is like a deterioration of the world itself.
Yes.
Like, you see, like, one fly and just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah, okay.
And that'd be good. That'd be fun. That sounds like a cult movie from A24 where it's just this guy's going crazy. Just, there's this house fly, but every time you see it, it's a bit bigger.
Yeah.
Imagine it's, like, the size of a house.
Fun fact. This is not the first A24 movie I saw. I saw a couple before this. That is what it means when I say this wasn't the first one I saw. I'm so sorry to say the same thing four times.
I was confused. I'm glad you cleared that up for me. Thank you. I wasn't following until you...
Okay. This is the movie that like made me truly deeply fall in love with them. Where like, I put in my head like, oh, all of these movies were like the same company. And all of these movies are so drastically different. And while I may not be in love with all of them, I respect all of them for being as interesting as they are.
Yeah.
And this movie like is the movie that solidified to me like
that they're a good studio.
Yeah. That if they aren't already, they were going to be like the indie powerhouse. This is the movie that solidified to me where I'm like,
yeah, they're mainstream indies, their whole thing.
In 10 years they're gonna fucking be they're gonna be the
big. Do you argue even now because Hereditary?
Yeah.
Hereditary is mainstream. Like they make mainstream.
Well, yeah, now that it has been almost 10 years, they've been doing that. Well, I think, 2013 was when they started. Tusk was the first one where I was aware that was what, was the A24 movie. I was aware it was
an A24 movie. It's been 11 years since I was a wee man.
I know, buddy. I'm
sorry. Oh, God.
So Hank falls out of the tree.
We need to watch a movie where I can grapple with the struggle of growing older.
Pick it. You pick next week, buddy. Hank breaks his ankle. The bear starts dragging him. He and Manny have this like beautiful heart-to-heart about how when they die, their body just shits themselves.
Yeah, all the shit mixed together.
And all the shit mixed together. And it's like this beautiful everything is connected metaphor.
Which is also an A24 staple, the really weird convoluted metaphor that the characters express verbally. That's the entirety of everything ever all at once.
Yeah. That might, I mean, yeah, it's A24, but that also might be Daniels too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so right before Hank is about to get eaten, Manny decides to develop even more magic powers and does this weird like choppy
he just becomes a moving man.
Yes, and he starts like fumbling over to the bear and he sets himself on fire, which frightens the bear off.
I would discuss it as disinterests the bear. The bear just kind of goes, and it like turns and walks away.
Okay.
I think the bear just decided that he wanted no part of this.
That, you know what? That's fair.
I thought he was going to karate chop the bear.
He does this hella dope
backflip. I thought he was going to karate chop the bear, and I'm kind of sad he did.
By the way, that is 1 hour and 15 minutes into this movie. We have 20 minutes left of this movie.
And it goes by fast.
It goes by so fast.
Paul's been pretty messed up by the bear. He's bleeding. He passes out.
Yes. Passes out. Manny carries Paul to safety, where they end up
to the worst possible place he could have taken
him. To Mary Elizabeth Winstead's backyard.
Yeah, he takes him to like the most awkward, terrible situation.
Where she's just doing dishes.
He could have possibly done.
Yeah, she's just doing dishes. They have their small fight in the backyard where Hank's afraid to talk to her.
As he's right.
Yeah.
They should have left.
Manny has the like, we're all ugly, but maybe like that would make us feel less alone.
Won't. This is not where the movie lost me. I enjoyed the movie to the end. This is where I start to fundamentally disagree with the decisions of Manny.
Okay.
I'm like, Manny, you are putting your friend in a bad situation. He should not be talking to her about this. He should be talking to a therapist about this.
I agree. But someone needs to help him to be alive and get a therapist.
Oh, if only they're in a suburban neighborhood.
Yeah, I agree. No, I'm with you, dude. Anyway, Chrissy, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's daughter, finds them. And Manny explains this whole thing and he starts talking to her and how
waves his dick at her.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, Paul Dano swats the dick away. That's the
bravely defending a child.
That's the one moment in this movie that that's the moment that gets me every time I watch this movie where I'm like, that should have been cut. That right there, you can do so much. That's the one thing in this movie that I think doesn't go too far, but like edges towards too far.
Please don't talk about imagining. Don't bring up magic in this situation, I beg of you.
I wasn't going to. And so Mary Elizabeth Winstead comes out and is like, yo, fucking, what the fuck is going on here? Let me call for help. And then Manny is sad because Chrissy and Sarah are like, did you see the way they looked at me? I'm a fucking freak. I don't tell Sarah how much I love her. And
he's dead.
Fucking dies.
They just fucking
again
die. Leaving
for like the fourth time.
Leaving his poor friend to deal with this colossal fuck up he's in. And it's his fault too, again, for his choice in lock screen, for not putting a code on his phone.
At this point, 911 has been called, and the EMTs and police and news are
everyone
all here.
Shows up. They mistake the terribly wallpapered phone for Manny.
Yes. They mistake Hank for Manny, and Manny is just a corpse. He's just a bridge jumper. And Hank's dad comes and doesn't look at the corpse like, I can't see it.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I can't identify this corpse. This makes me too sad. Which means he does love his son because he thinks that's Hank. That's when Andy Hall and Shane Carruth show up.
Yeah, and they start like interviewing
in the smallest.
Who they think's Manny.
Yeah.
And then he does the morally correct choice.
Okay, go for
it. But like the worst possible to sit. He's doing the best he can to be a good person, the awful situation Manny stuck him in, which he goes, no. I'm Hank Thomas. I'm the stalker. Follow me, everyone. I'm going to get on my corpse sled and ride through what I'm going to describe as the Disney World of stalkers' obsession.
Yes, because he's not going to let them just take Manny to a random morgue and then bury him in an unmarked grave. that Manny, that humanity saved his life.
I mean, look, he's going to have to reckon with the fact that she knows he's the stalker. I think he's not going to end it well with her. I don't think he ever thought he was going to end it well.
No.
He could have ended well with everyone pretty well. Just go to the funeral and pay for his grave.
I mean, that is not...
Instead,
that doesn't make for an interesting ending.
You're right. It's more interesting. It is
not
more
even,
interesting.
It ties into the metaphor better.
Yeah, it does. I'm looking at it exclusively as like a realistic viewpoint.
I agree.
As opposed to the absolute insanity. He uses his body like it's the fucking boat from Willy Wonka, but instead of a magical land of chocolate adventure, it's like the Small World ride, but it's Mary-Kate Winslet walking through the Small World ride, but it's all about a man's obsession with her.
So he takes Manny through the woods, down the
river.
Yeah,
they're right there. This whole time they were like right next to her house.
Yeah, well, they were lost in the woods. It's not like...
I know, I'm not saying that it's crazy. I'm just saying that, like, unfortunately for everyone involved, this entire time they were right next to her house.
Yes, and while he's taking them to the shore... he discovers, the Mary Elizabeth Winstead and the police and everyone.
Discovers the Small World ride, but it's all just scenes from her Instagram.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, it becomes almost, there's another movie there where it's a horror film.
Yes, from a completely different perspective, this is an A24 horror film.
Like, there's this guy stumbles in your yard, and you're taking care of him, and then he has a corpse with him. And then, like, you find this... It's a theme park. It's a blend, because we've seen him build all the fun sets before, but now they're all, like, in this small space, and she's walking through, like, this Blair Witch Instagram world of his obsession with her.
Yeah, that's fucking weird. It's fucking dark. It's fucking weird. I want Daniels. I want their next, it's not going to be, nor do I really want it to be, but I want their next movie to be the same movie from Mary Elizabeth Winstead's perspective, where instead of starting on the island, we start at the end of Swiss Army Man.
Like a 20 minute.
Yeah, like the first 5 to 10 minutes.
Is just that.
And then it's everything afterwards where she has to like discover, where she has to like... understand this man was stalking her and the fear she lives in from then on. Anyway.
It's just haunting.
I think that would rule. That'd be a great movie.
It becomes a haunting scene.
Oh my God, it would. From her... I can empathize. I cannot imagine what she is thinking.
Yeah, luckily for... us, and I'm going to say most people, in fact, it's very hard to imagine finding like a Boy Scouts rendition of your life that he kind of played around in. Like, it's so far beyond like even regular shit women have to deal with. It goes on to truly like, this is going to be in a true crime podcast.
Yes.
In like a year.
It's stalker behavior. It is stalker behavior.
To the most
not,
extreme
yes, and not
expression.
But. It's not but isn't a dismissive, but isn't a however, like a tangential related point. It is stalker, horrible, creepy behavior. At no point do I believe it turns violent or would turn violent.
I don't believe
however,
the movie's saying that he's a threat to her.
Correct.
But it has become cartoonish in the fear it induces.
Yes, 100%. I am not minimizing how fucking creepy this is.
Yeah, because she can't see, she hasn't watched Swiss Army Knife Man, Dead Makeshift Tool Guy.
I thought you were, okay.
She hasn't seen the movie, so she doesn't
Multi-purpose
know.
Tool Guy?
Yeah.
So they're all, he takes him to the shore that they washed on where he found the Miracle Cheese Puffs, and he has this big like emotional speech to this corpse, how like they're the weird ones, we're not the weird ones, but they think we're the weird
ones.
Everyone's
watching him have this conversation.
Yeah.
He's not coming back from this.
No. So the cop goes to arrest him. Well, first Sarah, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, is like, yo, did you fucking build all that? Bro, is that
the cop goes to arrest him. Which I don't think he has grounds to arrest him. He's grounds to detain him.
Yeah.
Also, I'm pretty sure that cops do not get involved unless he's actively harming him.
I mean,
correct. It's very hard to get a restraining order against a man unless they're actively causing you harm. And I don't think a police force in America would consider the wildest arts and crafts project live to be harm.
In any true crime world, it goes violent.
Yeah, in any true, he becomes the fucking theme park killer.
It's, oh my god. No, it's, yeah, he goes full Norman Bates.
Yeah, he's the Willy, he the Willy Wonka stalker. He dresses up as her and
murders people as her. Like, yeah. But,
you're going to pretend to be the person on the bus when I have my meet cute.
So
that's a word I use because I'm crazy.
So the police try to arrest him, and then he finally publicly farts.
Yeah,
he is emotionally honest, and he's like, "I did that."
Yeah, because the guy really overreacts to him farting.
Yeah, it must have been a real stinky.
Yeah. Okay. If I'm arresting someone and they fart, I'm not gonna be like, "Did you just fucking fart?" I'm just gonna be like, "Ah, great.
It was me." And so they're walking away, and they hear the fart, and the police is like, "Yo,
really?"
Dude.
And he goes, "That wasn't me."
And then it cuts to Manny vibrating,
and then he shoots off into the ocean. And Paul's smiling, his father's smiling,
Chrissy's laughing.
The kid's laughing. The news people don't know what's going on. The police officer is completely stone faced, and
Mary Elizabeth Winston
says, "What the fuck?" Last two shots are the smiling face of Manny and the smiling face of Hank, and that is the end of the movie.
And truly, it just cuts to black, and then in very thin white text at the end. So that was bizarre.
So, like, he's going to be in, like, a psych ward.
Yeah, 1,000%. That's the next 10 minutes of this
best
movie.
Best case scenario, he has no civil liberties and his dad takes care of him.
Oh, yeah. 100%. It doesn't. There's no way this ends well for him. Everyone will convince themselves that this wasn't real. Just to survive, because they have to. I don't want a full sequel unless it's like Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I told you what the sequel is. Batman. Yeah, this is how he becomes the Riddler.
Yes.
This is what happens. Look, if they said that, I wouldn't agree with it, but I would totally be okay with it. I'd be like, you know what? Narratively, what he goes through, that's how the Riddler's made. I'm not going to question it.
I wanted to start with him escaping into the woods. I don't want to start with him in the yard. I want him to start with him escaping into the woods, Mary Elizabeth Winstead seeing her Instagram in real life.
My pitch for a sequel is he's in court, and it's my cousin Vinny. We bring him back.
Okay.
And like the court scenes are actually a very little part of it.
Uh-huh.
Because most of it is Vinny on a boat trying to find the star witness Manny, and they bring Manny back into the courtroom. He does little dead tricks.
See, okay.
You would watch that movie.
I mean, obviously, because it's a sequel to Swiss Army Man. But
and not a sequel to My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, I mean, fair. I would want to see the Mary Elizabeth Winstead horror movie, or I would want like a legit, from Hank's perspective, what is the end of Hank's story, 15 minutes short, like directly after the movie, what happens?
He's committed.
I mean, yeah, but I want to see that. Like, I want proof that, like,
you did see it. We both lived it at one point in our life. We know what happens to him.
I mean, yeah, we do.
He kind of okay hospital food for like a week or two.
Yeah.
Took me out on fucking steak day. Ever tell you about that shit?
What?
Steak day. And they fucking said, you got to go.
Oh,
you're fine.
Oh, nice.
I was like, should I bite the doctor so I can get my steak? Like, what do I have to do to get this? I've been waiting for a few days now. They're taking me out on that bullshit, bruh. Oh, fuck you, State of Ohio.
So that was Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, good movie. Finally off my list.
Yeah, are you glad?
Yeah, I'm glad. I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Again, I kind of lose myself a bit with the characters in the end, agreeing with their actions.
Sure.
Mostly the Manny makes the worst possible choice, but it's a good movie. Good ending.
Nice. In between Swiss Army Man and Everything Everywhere All at Once, Daniels kind of like split off and do their own solo things for a little while. Kwan directs some television. Scheibert. I think it's Scheibert.
Don't look at me for names.
Okay. He directs some television, but also directs a movie called The Death of Dick Long, which I have not seen. I do want to see it. Truly, no,
We should do a special where we both haven't seen it, because there's another one I want to see.
Okay.
Not sure if it's out yet.
Okay.
It's made by the people that made... not Undercover Brother. What's the other one?
Okay.
Black Dynamite.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But it's him and he's a cowboy.
Oh, nice.
He's called Johnny Black. The Ballad of Johnny Black.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, dude. That's dope. Yeah, we'll definitely. We should pick episodes neither of us have seen.
Like, we had a really good period there where, like, we just got out of a bad period of blaxploitation films.
Yeah.
And then, like, people of color started making really good satires of them. And those are some of the best fucking movies. Black Dynamite is so fucking funny. It's like shot to be like such a shitty movie.
I have to have seen. I don't remember. I have to have seen it. Truly, add it to the list. We'll fucking watch it.
I mean, I know what I'm bringing next week. It's a real stinker.
Oh no! You know you don't like it, and you want to watch it.
It, viewers. I think this is an important movie to watch. I think everyone should see it.
Okay, tell me what is
it's. It's universally acclaimed as like the worst movie ever made, the most expensive worst movie ever made.
Okay.
It is the animated classic Food Fight.
Okay, cool.
Have you seen Food Fight?
I've seen clips of Food Fight. I have never seen Food Fight start to finish.
Perfect. I saw some friends, and our graphic designer friend tried to leave the room literally after the title screen, and we had to barricade the door with a couch to stop them from leaving.
So that's next week. Any final thoughts on Swiss Army Man?
I think that, once again, it really reinforces A24's mission of people should take risks in their movie making. You know, if you have a dumb idea, you think it can work, make it work, you know, because you might end up with something like really beautiful and interesting and really kind of like film is such a good medium for that, I think, because you can be much more loose with film compared to like a book or some of the more traditional narrative you have to follow. You can be less traditional with a movie and you can kind of really explore fun ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think this was really when A24 started to take off. I think it's a wonderful christening of their ship. Like, this is truly an A24 ship. And that shows you that you can put Mary-Kate Winslet in something and not have it be about a sad sack of person who wants to get with their fucking manic pixie dream wife. And then they get in the end and it's okay, even though he's a fucking piece of shit.
Scott Pilgrim is great. Most people misunderstand that movie. We all know this. This is not a fresh take.
When I establish my socialist dictatorship, I'm going door to door and holding up a DVD case of Scott Pilgrim. I'm like, is this your favorite movie? And if they say yes, I'm shooting them in the fucking head.
I would give them some explanation.
It should not be your favorite movie. No,
there are people whose it is their favorite movie and they fully understand it. They just love the movie.
Never met them.
Okay, I know one or two. I'm not saying on mic.
Running on another soapbox.
Okay.
Another soapbox of my hatred.
Oh, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's great in this movie. She's great in most
things. Check out her other stuff.
Turns out good at what she does for a living.
If you want to see some people who aren't as good as her at what they're trying to do, twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to talk to us or send us anything. We're at Twitter. You don't really need to follow us there, but I think that's two men. I literally can't remember. I don't give a shit about Twitter. You can find us there. I'll post the links to new episodes. I am not going to engage. Thank you for that emotional honesty, Harrison. Two Men Movie Podcast at Instagram. Two Men Movie Podcast on YouTube. You can find me at Midwest_Magician on Instagram. I'll post occasionally on there.
This is Editing Harrison saying that you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at harrisonpoole.com. That's P-O-O-L-E, harrisonpoole.com. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme song.
Thank you for listening. You know, you enjoyed us. Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Unless she's dead. You know, she's dead. Just Jack went off to her. Tell your dad. Tell your the person you're stalking. Right. Build them a little send the woods of us. You don't know what we look like? Imagine it. Invite them in. Get them to subscribe. You fall in love. That's your meet cute.
All right. Thank
and
you so
much. And then
invite
us to your wedding. I've never been to a wedding either.
You've never? That's weird. Holy shit.
My family doesn't have happy marriages.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
Have a good one.
I hope you have happy marriages. Kisses.
All right. I'm closing. I'm stopping the recording. I love you, buddy.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.